You get dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you've got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine and maybe, just maybe, a little bit more. Here are your hosts, Dr. Brian McCarty and big-time Mike McGivern on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome into the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host, almost each and every week, Dr. Brian McCarty. How are you, Doctor?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Michael. How are you today?
I'm doing really good.
It's a beautiful day.
You playing golf today?
I don't think today. I think today will be a day spent hanging out with my daughter, which I'm looking forward to.
It's awesome.
She's busy doing things most of the time, so we're having a good time today. And then tomorrow, maybe.
Maybe.
It's awfully nice. I tell you, if it was this way all year, I would not complain.
Well, there are places in the country that are like this.
I think I'm heading to one next week.
Yeah, that's why I said almost each and every week. I'm going to have co-hosts, different special guest co-hosts next week and the following week. And
you will. Dr. Clay Frank's going to fill in for me next week, and Dr. Bindu Bamra the week after that. So, you know, we'll see if it's if you miss me at all. I doubt it. But you're in capable hands with other experts from our program at Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine.
So. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and we'll see how it goes. And, you know, Brett Favre didn't never want to come out of the lineup because of somebody who's better. And
well, you know, that's the risk you take.
That is the risk you take.
It's all right. I think I'm looking forward to letting these guys come on in, and we'll have a, you know, we're a team, and we've been a team along, so it'll be great. We're looking forward to it.
You bet. During the show, if you want to tweet questions for either of our guests, and our special in-studio guest today is Dr. Damian Kosampa. Dr. Damian, how are you today?
Great, Mike. Thanks for having me in today.
Yeah, it's good to see you again. You can tweet either of our guests, hashtag SportsMedRadio, and we will try to get your question answered during the hour. Hey, let's talk with some Green Bay Packer injuries. The Sean Richardson one, boy, that's a serious neck injury for that young man.
It really is. You know, I talked to one of my partners, Dr. Tom Perlowitz, this morning, who's a spine specialist at Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine and Midwest Orthopedic Specialty Hospital. And we spoke a little bit about the type of injury that he's had. Now, Dr. Frank, who's also a spine specialist, orthopedic surgeon, was here last week. And we talked a little bit about when guys are disqualified from competition. And there's some controversy about this. Now, Sean Richardson has been a great special teams player and backup safety for the Packers. And I know they really like this guy. And it's really a shame that he's had another injury. But he had a fusion surgery between his C5 and C6 vertebrae. So for people out there who aren't aware of what that really means, they hear that term. You think of the vertebrae as little, they're like stacked discs on top of one another. They're bony parts with a soft tissue disc in between. So think of like a set of bone blocks with a soft disc in between each one. And we count those from the top of the spine down, so C1, C2, C3, et cetera. The higher you get up, the closer you get to things like breathing issues around the spinal cord. But the spinal cord is right next to these areas. And in the neck, a spinal cord injury can result in quadriplegia, which is not the inability to move all your arms and legs and things. So when you're hitting people with, as you are in safety or special teams and making tackles, when you're missing one of those segments, it can be risky. And we just talked to Dr. Frank, and he said, you know, most of the guys will let people go back after these fusions. Well, unfortunately for Sean Richardson, he had the fusion. He came back. He's been playing. Now he has another level that has a disc herniation. When you have two of these, you start running out of movement segments. And, you know, we talked a little bit about Gary's analogy of this running into a garage door 25 times, you know. And how that's, you know, what Dr. Perlowitz likened it to is like getting into three or four car accidents a game. And so, you know, you think about it, if you have this neck problem and you've had fusions, you know, you get to the point where this is probably it is definitely a career threatening injury for him.
When you talk about starting with C1 and going down, how far down do you go?
Well, the C stands for cervical.
Okay.
So there are seven cervical levels. And then you get into the thoracic spine after that. So,
you know, and they're talking it's probably current, and I think that's the right move. This young man, especially with the position in the sport he plays, the risk is really high.
It would be very, very high, I think. And I don't suspect that he's going to get cleared. Now, we don't know how severe this disc injury is and all of that, but it doesn't sound good, put it that way.
Hey, a couple of the Packers, Brian Bulaga, sounds like he's probably going to play. Coming back quick from that knee surgery.
Yeah, we talked about this a few weeks ago. He had a combined MCL, medial collateral ligament injury. So to remind everybody, that's on the inside part of your knee, connecting the femur and tibia bones together. He also had a meniscus problem in there where he had torn his medial meniscus, and that was treated with arthroscopy. Arthroscopy is when we put a little camera in the knee, and then we can trim the cartilage. And we do this all the time. The usual return is about 2 to 4 weeks. You know, he's a big guy. He's had previous injury with ACL. So, you expect maybe closer to the 4 week. He's a little ahead of schedule, I'd say. But from what we heard on the news yesterday, it sounds like he's been in practice and doing well, not getting a lot of swelling after practice, which is a good sign. So,
will they brace that even more than they normally would?
No, but they will probably continue to use a brace for his medial collateral ligament injury, yes. And braces are very effective for the ligament injuries on the sides of the knee, especially in linemen. They help with that. With ACLs, they're not as effective, but with the MCL or the LCL, they're much more effective.
You know, we talked last week about Morgan Burnett and Davante Adams. Adams, that ankle, we talked the difference between an ankle sprain and a high ankle.
Yeah.
And that he's obviously has that high ankle and it's hard to come back from.
Yeah, I think he tried to play through it is what happened. So he got injured and, they're a little thin there with Jordy out. And so he tried to tough it out. And I think he made it a bit worse. Matter of fact, I know he did because you could see when he did it. He was playing and then he had another injury and he couldn't come. So now he's in the rehab process. And I think he's still probably on the outside looking in this week, although, we don't really have access to that, but it doesn't sound like he's been a full participant yet.
When somebody has a high ankle sprain, is there anything they can do other than rest to get that to heal quicker?
Well, we have talked about this a little bit. The high ankle sprain, and I don't know for sure that Davante has that. There are different grades of ankle sprain.
Right.
So a grade 3 sprain where you've torn the ligaments completely, it takes longer to recover. So not all of the ones that take a long time to get back are high ankle sprains. But the high ankle ones go in between the two bones. There's ligaments that connect the two bones together, the fibula and tibia bones of the lower leg. And in the worst case scenario, you can actually separate the bones completely and that can require surgery to repair the ligaments. And he hasn't needed that.
Right. But is that if somebody's walking on it,
yeah,
walking and putting weight on it, it wouldn't be the most. Could you walk if you had the worst case scenario?
Well, you could, but it wouldn't be a good idea.
It wouldn't be comfortable.
Not only wouldn't be comfortable, it would actually inhibit the healing process in that situation. But for most ankle sprains, people are able to walk on them, particularly in a cam walk or boot. They can get around and do just fine.
Hey, real quick, Randall Cobb. Shoulder still stinging him a little bit, but he's going to play. It's interesting. He said, look, this time of year in the NFL, there's nobody that's 100%, and I'm ready to go.
So. Well, he would know. I mean, he's going to be dealing with that all year. That's going to be, with his position getting hit and driven down on that shoulder, he had an AC joint sprain from all reports, and that's something he's probably safe for him to continue to play, but he's going to be having that issue, I think, ongoing.
Yeah, a couple other NFL players. Marshawn Lynch out for the game on Sunday. He's got a hamstring injury. And those, especially with somebody with as much wear and tear as Marshawn Lynch has, that might be a bit.
It's very difficult for running backs. They need that hamstring to fire to be able to hit the hole. And so it's very difficult. It's a little bit like we were talking about with Morgan Burnett with his calf. These are soft tissue injuries, usually at the junction of the tendon and the muscle. And they have to be able to push off really hard to get where they need to go. So if you're a safety and you're trying to cut on a ball and you try to push off and there's nothing there, you're not going to be able to get there. So, it's not like, Rodgers was able to work around that a little bit.
Right.
They can't do that. So I think they'll be very careful with Marshawn, making sure that he's healthy.
Hey, last guy I saw Steve Smith get hit, the Baltimore Ravens wide receiver last week, and he took a vicious shot on the sidelines and jumped up and started walking back to the huddle and shaking his head like, no, I'm fine. And as he got back to the huddle, boom, down he went. And it was his back. He's doubtful to play in Sunday's game. Did you see that hit?
I did. I saw the play, and it didn't look that bad. I mean, it looked like, yeah, I mean, they all look bad, don't they?
Yeah, that one looked bad to me, I thought.
But, yeah, he's a tough guy. I mean, he's played through so many injuries, so I was very surprised to see him go down on the field like that. So I think that's a pretty significant injury.
Dr. Damian Kosepa, again, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it. And we're going to talk a lot today about common athletic hip injuries. And if we could start with your background, I know you're a St. Catharines guy, and I want to kind of get to some of the injuries that we're going to talk about. But you're a local guy and coming back home, and good for you. You're a St. Catharines guy that's done well.
Yep, St. Catharines, and was Badger, and I was away from my training for a few years, been back in town for a couple of years now.
Da, da, da,
yeah, you
da,
always
da,
look
da,
at me when the guy sitting to your left says, yeah, well, yeah, I'm a Badger.
We have a lot of Wisconsin roots here.
A lot.
And by the way, Under Armour, $96 million contract for the Badgers for 10 years.
I wish they would have done this a year ago. Because the young man from Whitefish Bay Dominican,
yeah, right,
Diamond Stone, I think went to Maryland because of that. So,
well, you may be right. There's a lot of hypotheses.
There are, and that's just my opinion. There's no fact there. It's just my opinion. So the common hip injuries, and we're going to talk about the overuse. Then we're going to talk about the traumatic injuries and some of the mixed. Ones and if we can, I want to start a little bit with one that I hear a lot about, and that's hip pointers, and that's a traumatic one that you hear that term hip pointer, doctor, and I don't know what it means.
Right, there are a couple things it can refer to, but most commonly, what we're talking about is a direct impact to the brim of the pelvis, called your iliac wing, and it's bony prominence right below the skin, so when you're hit from the side, it's very prone to bruising. And it's not just that bone, but it's the cartilage cap on that bone and the surrounding soft tissues that are attached to it. So when you get hit right on that hurts a lot. That's why the football players wear the foam side pads to try to protect that. But it is something that hurts quite a bit and can be limiting for several weeks after that's bruised.
And different degrees, correct? I mean, there are some that you know, can come back a little bit quicker, but they're all very painful. But depending on how severe it is?
Right, yeah. Some of it's got to do with, the severity of the hit and an athlete's pain tolerance. Some of it's got to do with their position and what they're expected to do. The big thing about them is they're not necessarily dangerous. Most of them you can play through. It just comes down to how uncomfortable it is and how much pain they're willing to put up with.
And if anybody's ever been hit in that area or just landed on your hip, this area you're talking about is just around the waist area. You can feel that bony prominence. You hit that, it hurts a lot. And what happens is it's a degree of bruising and bleeding that occurs underneath the injury often dictates how quickly you can return. Is that true?
I agree with that. Yeah.
You know, the comeback strategy for something like that, and I was reading up a little bit on it, and what I read was it's important to move the hip so it does not get stiff and lose range of motion, but you need to respect the healing process as well.
Right. It's a lot of stretching modalities as far as ice and things. But like you alluded to, Mike, keeping the surrounding muscles from tightening up, atrophying, getting out of their normal firing sequence.
Yeah. So what that means for people listening out there is that if you can keep your body moving, and you can keep the rest of your body healthy, you can work around these injuries. And then when you come back, you only have that one area to kind of get ready. And it's very important to keep this in mind, whether you're a weekend warrior or whether you're playing actively in the NFL. If you have an injury, we rehab around the injury, right? So everything else keeps moving. And so you don't want to lose the firing sequence. You don't want to lose the ability to fire those muscles normally. And then when you come back, the rest of you is still healthy and ready to go. Is that true?
I agree. And I think the worst thing that can happen is you just rest. Everything else falls out of alignment and sequence a little bit. And you come back and you hurt something else. So I think that's critically important.
He is Dr. Damian Kosepa. You can check out more information on him at mymosh.com. Also, if you want to tweet any questions for Dr. Brian McCarty or Dr. Kosepa, you can tweet us at hashtag SportsMedRadio, and we'll try to get those questions answered. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk a little bit about hip flexors. Got a couple of questions for you on that one, Dr. Kosepa. And again, that's a term that I hear a lot about, and I don't know a ton, and I just kind of shake my head and say, oh, he had a hip flexor.
Well, the other thing we want to touch on, we're going to go through the whole Bo Jackson saga. For anyone who's out there who remembers the great Bo Jackson, we're going to talk a little bit about what happened to him, football injuries with the hip.
Excellent. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Yeah. Kendrick Lamar, Money Trees, brought to you by our special guest, Dr. Damian Kosepa.
Dr. Kosepa was at the clubs rocking this last night.
And we have the same music taste.
I was at a high school football game last night, for the record.
Which game were you at?
Thomas More game.
Against Whitefish Bay Dominican.
Against Dominican, yeah.
In a stretch limo.
In a stretch limo. And Kendrick Lamar was probably not played during that
game. He was not, but the kids may have been listening at halftime.
They may have. Hey, I wanted to ask you, Dr. Kosepa, I hear the term hip flexor a lot. And again, it's one where I say, oh, that's too bad, but I have no idea what that actually means.
Yeah, well, you know, the hip flexor injury is sort of a garbage bucket term. It can be a few things, but if you think about the anatomy of the hip, there are several things that actually flex it. There's a big, deep muscle called the iliopsoas, which can be strained. There's overuse injuries that hurt that with tendonitis. But also other muscles flex the hip as well. The rectus muscle, which is one of your main thigh muscles, and sartorius, which is another thigh muscle. And to some degree, the adductors, which are on the inside of the hip. So there's ways to hurt it, both with overuse and then with a distinct stretch or strain injury that can hurt any of those things and cause pain in the front of the hip. Now, the problem with the hip flexor is that there's a lot of things that also look like that, and it's sometimes a confusing or difficult diagnosis because there's problems within the hip with either the cartilage or the labrum, which is a soft tissue structure, and additionally problems within the abdomen, like the dreaded sports hernia that we hear a little bit about that can sort of mimic the hip flexor symptoms.
So Mike, just to clarify, the pain is a lot of times in the same general vicinity, but there are a lot of structures that overlap there. So what we're talking about for people out there is if you were to raise your knee up, okay, so you take your knee and you lift it straight up, you're flexing the hip. That's what we call that. And so in the groin area, there are a whole bunch of different muscles and tendons and cartilage structures that can be injured. These all get lumped together in your dreaded hip flexor, right?
Right.
So then,
yeah.
And then you just nod your head and go, yeah. I'm all over that, right?
I know what to say now. Call Dr. Kosepa.
Exactly. You just say, I got this. So one of our things is if you're having that problem, you know, if you go to see Dr. Kosepa or you come to see us in the clinic, then we'll help to diagnose exactly what it is. And you say, well, how do you know that? Well, that's because we went to school and stuff. And in doctor school, they teach you stuff like this.
So. Right.
Thank goodness for that.
I know, right?
Yeah,
right.
We wouldn't have anything to talk about on this show at all. What type of athletes? When I worked in soccer, hip flexor was a term that was used a lot.
Right. Yeah, and in soccer, you know, you think of the motion of kicking, and that is kind of exactly what you think of when you flex your hip, you know, bringing your knee up toward your chest. And it's often these explosive athletes like a football player, a soccer player, where you acutely sprain or strain that muscle and tendon in the front of the hip.
Yeah, you see it a lot in track, from sprinting and that sort of thing as well. So Dr. Kosepa, if you had somebody who came in and they said, or they called, or they sent us a note on Twitter at hashtag SportsMedRadio, for example.
Well done. Yeah, Look at you getting involved with this.
I'm a Twitterer.
Yes, you are.
If they sent a note and they said, hey, I'm having this hip issue, would there be certain parameters, say, if they said, geez, you know, I have a different age athlete. Let me just give you a couple of case scenarios so that you can help with people out there. So if you have a young child, maybe 10, 11, 12, who's having hip problems, limping around, what would you recommend for that?
Yeah, a lot of this comes down to the history and the age of the patient. You can usually make a pretty fair guess at a diagnosis just from those two things. Kids are always more difficult with the presence of open growth plates. So there are some things that we really should not miss with an 11, 12, 13, 14-year-old kid who's got hip pain, especially hip pain with weight-bearing and hip pain that's been around for a little while.
So in other words, if a young child is having hip pain, they're limping, they should...
They should get an x-ray and be seen by one of us.
Yes, absolutely. That's very serious because there are some serious issues that can happen in the hip at that age. That should not be ignored because they can cause long-term problems.
Infection, slipping of the growth plate, blood supply problems to the top of the hip joint. So certainly things that shouldn't be waited on.
Are there ways to prevent this? I mean, if you're warming up correctly, does that help with this?
Some things, yes. But, you know, the things that we've really talked about that we don't want to miss in kids, probably not. You know, some of it's related to body habitus and genes and the relatively weak portion of the growth plate. But some of these hip flexor strains and sprains certainly can be prevented made less likely by appropriate stretching and keeping the whole muscle tendon unit strong in the hip area.
Yeah, I think one of the important things to remember is that If you're seeing an athlete limping around and it's not gone in a day or two, you definitely need to get that addressed. If you can't put weight on it, you need to get it addressed right away, right? These are just fundamental, simple things for coaches and parents out there.
Yep, absolutely.
But, and you know what? And it's funny, and I scratch my head, but that seems to be like common sense, but it's not. It's you know what? He'll get better. Let's give him a few more days, or she'll get better, and let's give her a few more days.
Right.
And you're hoping that 3, 4, 5 days, and if they're limping after,
right? And a little bit of a limp, you know, can be a sign of something that's not a big deal, but certainly anything that comes on traumatically, something that you can't bear weight on, something that's in the groin more than in the outside of the hip. I certainly worry less about pain kind of on the outside of the hip where you can push on it and lay on it and it hurts, but things that hurt in the groin, right in the front of the hip, tend to be more suggestive of a problem in the joint.
Yeah, the reason that Dr. Crescempo is mentioning the groin pain is because that's where a lot of times you get pain referred from the joint itself, right? And so things that affect the actual hip, ball, and socket joint are usually more serious and more worrisome than things that are muscular. So there is quite a differential, a distinction between those two types of injury, right?
Correct. Absolutely.
Hey, real quick before we get to a break, coming back from a hip flexor, what is kind of the comeback strategy on something like that?
Yeah, you know, I think the first big thing with that is ruling out any of these bad things that we don't want to miss, labrum tear, sports hernia, stress fracture, things like that. And, you know, once we're pretty convinced that it's just a muscle tendon injury, it comes down to anti-inflammatories, stretching, rehabbing the whole area, and then as symptoms allow, getting you back to it. So it can be as soon as a week or two. It can be several weeks.
Yeah. So the key thing, people, is just make sure you have a trainer or a therapist or a physician or a sports med specialist check you over. Okay. And it's been going on for a while. Get a diagnosis, right? We talk about this every week, but it really does help. Then you'll know what's wrong and how long it should take to get better.
Yeah. As I do the show each week, I don't know if not knowing anything like I did before or getting to know just a little bit like I know now is better, because now it's like, oh, my hip hurts. Oh, the it's just, I think it's all in my mind.
You have all of these things.
Everything we've talked about, but I'm so tough that I keep working through it. Hey, last thing with that, and again, doing some research this morning, I read that once you get mobile, that cross training and probably like swimming rather than running to kind of get back is the way to go.
Yeah, I think cross training is always great from the standpoint of using different muscles so you stay more in balance than some of these athletes who just do one thing all the time. But certainly from a rehab perspective, anything that's low impact and lesser weight bearing is always a good idea in my book.
The other thing I've learned is have a plan.
Always got to have a plan.
Got to have a plan. Our special guest in studio, he is Dr. Damian Crescempo. Again, you can check out information on him, mymosh.com, for any information on Dr. McCarty, Dr. Crescempo, the people at Mosh. And during the show, you can tweet us, #SportsMedRadio, and we'll try to get your questions answered. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. That's Trample by Turtles. Wait So Long, brought to you again by our special in-studio guest, Dr. Damian Kosempa.
If I didn't know better, I think Kosempa was an Irish name.
Yeah, that's sad. I think if we kept it going, it wasn't going to continue as like an Irish song. But
I do have some Irish blood, but not from the Kosempa side.
There you go. Hey, guys, let's take this segment, and you had kind of mentioned it in that first segment, the Bo Jackson injury, which still, if you know, they're running that 30-30 on ESPN, and they really do talk about it, but that was a heck of an injury.
You know, I saw that game when it was being played, and he was absolutely just mowing people down. It was incredible to watch, and the injury itself did not appear to be that big of a deal. In fact, they thought, Dr. Kosempa, that he had a hip pointer when he did it, and that's what his initial diagnosis was. So I thought it would be kind of fun to talk about the realities of what happened there. So differential diagnosis, big star athlete, gets injured, falls on his hip. He's got pain in his hip, can't continue in the game, but you're thinking maybe the following week he'll be back.
Right, yeah, you think hip pointer, you think flexor strain, adductor, hamstring, you think a contusion to the outside of the hip.
A contusion being a bruise, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, then you start to think about a little more serious and unusual things like a hip labrum tear, a hip cartilage injury. It doesn't even really pop into your head, a hip dislocation. I mean, it's sort of in the background, but it's certainly not one of your top 10 likely diagnoses, which it sounds like may have been the case, and you know, we kind of know where it went from there. That's a very serious injury.
Well, for people out there who don't know where it went from there, what happened is he ended up with the most serious injury that you can have, which is called avascular necrosis.
Right.
So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, what can happen anytime your hip pops out of socket, you can tear the blood vessels that supply the blood to the ball of the hip socket. If you think of the hip like a ball in a socket, the blood supply to the ball can die, and that causes the bone to soften and collapse very quickly. And it sounds like that's what happened to Bo within a couple week period of time.
When you say very quickly, so a couple weeks?
A couple weeks or a couple months, yeah. I think it sounded like by the time they got an x-ray, a few months after his injury, he already had very advanced arthritis and a collapsed femoral head.
Doesn't that go right back to what we talked about last segment? About making sure you get looked at,
yes,
and get a correct diagnosis.
Yes, and I will say that they knew that diagnosis very quickly after it happened. It didn't take months for them to know. In fact, they knew within a week or two that he had avascular necrosis. I know this because I'm old enough to remember that. But the interesting thing about this injury was that his injury didn't appear to be a hip dislocation. I mean, we've seen them. I can't remember which one of the Florida guys had a dislocated hip, ended up getting it reduced, did not develop avascular necrosis, ended up playing the NFL. But these are devastating injuries. If you have a hip dislocation, which is very rare, by the way, it's hard to do. Usually they're car accidents or some really high energy injury. They need to be reduced, meaning pop back in place really, really quickly to prevent this from occurring. In Bo's case, they never had to pop his hip back in.
Right.
So if it happened, it happened sort of spontaneously.
Popped out and self-reduced, which is, again, very unusual.
The whole thing is unusual. I can't think of another episode that's been like this. But the problem for people out there who are listening is you hear this term AVN or avascular necrosis, and you think, well, what is that? It's your bones are living tissues just like your skin and your muscles and everything else, and they require blood supply and oxygen to keep them healthy and alive. And what happens is if you lose that blood supply, you don't get any oxygen to the cells that are keeping your bone alive, and the bone dies. If the bone dies, it will fail. You know, and it's not like a piece of steel. It's actually constantly morphing and changing and everything else. And as soon as it starts to fail, the ball part will actually collapse and it no longer becomes round. It is excruciatingly painful. We see it occasionally, spontaneously in the knee, in the hip. Oftentimes it's the result of high-dose steroid use and sometimes in alcoholism we see it. Interestingly, scuba divers and deep sea divers encounter this because they develop nitrogen bubbles as they come up, and those nitrogen bubbles can plug the blood vessels and stop blood flow. So it's called Caisson's disease.
And with Bo Jackson, and this may be a foolish question, but if they knew, could they have prevented it being as serious as it was?
If he truly dislocated his hip and that was the reason for it, probably not. I think that there are a few attempted heroic measures people can do in early AVN by drilling some holes in the bone, sometimes putting a vascularized graft of another bone up there, but probably not, especially if it onset and went south as quickly as it sounds like it did.
Yeah, I mean, it was known within a couple of weeks that he was probably done, and which is incredible, right?
Yes.
It's unbelievably rare problem, and it's just it's tragic for those of us who are fans of sports that this happened to this guy because he was absolutely magnificent.
That's the part that for younger guys that say, you know, you say Bo Jackson, you go, yeah, he was a good athlete. He was unbelievable. He was an unbelievable athlete.
He was truly unbelievable. He was as good as he was at baseball. He was even better at football.
Yes.
And I think he would have gone down as one of the greatest running backs, in my opinion. He was one of the best I had seen. And certainly at the time that he got hurt, he was just hitting his prime. He was really just hitting his prime.
Well, and he was a guy that could absorb because he was a big, thick running back and faster than anybody on the field.
Right. So, world-class speed world-class size. It's a very strange combination.
Hey, before we get to a break, I got to say this because we were talking about this when you guys first came in. My oldest brother, Jim, had a hip replacement 10 years ago, and they told me he's going to eventually have the other one. And he was really nervous about it. He's down in Atlanta, and he had it done. And he called me like the next day. And he said, look, I got home yesterday. I had the surgery yesterday morning. I got home later in the afternoon, and I'm walking. And this is unbelievable what's happened in this field. 10 years ago, it was horrible surgery, and it was a really long rehab, and it was very painful. And he said, this is unbelievable. And you made a comment, Dr. Brian. You said hip replacement surgery is the most successful surgery in history.
It is. If you look at all factors in terms of quality of life improvement, and you look at risks, and you look at the benefits to the people, none of us who are doing these shows can remember all the people in wheelchairs who were unable to walk prior to Dr. Charnley from England coming up with a hip replacement. But this has completely changed life for people as they know it. And it is the single most successful procedure that's ever been developed.
Yeah, he said to me, had I known, because he was really struggling to walk for about 6 months.
Right.
And he said he just wanted to put it off as long as possible because how horrible it was 10 years ago. And he said, look, if I could get on the mountaintop and shout to say, hey, look, have it done. It's completely changed my life. And he said, I'm walking fine. I'm feeling great.
Yeah, there is a drastic difference for a lot of people. You know, you go from a 10 on a 100-point scale to a 90, 95 very quickly. That being said, it's not for everybody. You know, for a guy like Bo Jackson, it's not a good option. You certainly want to avoid that. It's got a limited lifespan. It's something for older people, ideally the 50s, 60s, and older. And there's actually a lot of interest these days in things to prevent that surgically, with surgery for impingement, labral tears. And, you know, as good as hip replacement surgery is, it's certainly not a good option for young people.
Yeah, we're going to talk with Dr. Kosempa in the next segment about hip arthroscopy and things that he can do short of that for younger patients to hopefully prevent the need for it at all. And also, we want to just really briefly close this segment with discussions about why you shouldn't go for a 13th opinion if 12 opinions have told you not to do something. So in Bo Jackson's case, he went to 12 different doctors, all of whom told him he couldn't play baseball after his hip replacement. And he just kept looking for somebody to say it was okay. And they did say it was okay, and he did come back and play baseball. But now he's on his fourth or fifth hip replacement.
Wow.
And, you know, you have to just remember, the easiest thing for us as surgeons is to fix the thing surgically. We do it all day long. And I always tell people, If I'm telling you you shouldn't have surgery, just think it through. It's easier for me to do surgery, right?
Right.
And because I can fix things. It's very simple. But we are here to help you. And so when you come to see us at Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine, Dr. Kosempa, myself, any of our partners, if we're advising you, we're going to advise you for the best thing for you. And that's very important to keep in mind. So, and you can always question that, and we can talk about it.
Sure.
But just remember, we have your interests in mind primarily. So,
and we'll continue that conversation on the other side of the break. Again, any questions that you have, you can tweet us, hashtag SportsMedRadio, and we'll try to get those questions answered. This is a Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. A new Alabama Shakes, Sound and Color, brought to you by our special in-studio guest, Dr. Damian Kosempa.
You know, I've got a lot of respect for eclecticism.
Well,
Damian Kosempa is covering the spectrum of music, which I think is awesome.
And if we had Neil Diamond, it would be, the whole circle would be
this is why you're
covered.
Not picking the music, Michael.
I don't even like Neil Diamond. Hey, we did, we have a tweet, and Doug has sent us a tweet that says, Dr. McCarty, great job on this radio show. He had medical replacement plus ACL.
Medial, yeah.
No, it says, medial, sorry. Yeah. Hold on, let me put my glasses
on. Hey,
Doug,
I'm glad you're doing better. Doug had a very complex problem, and you know, it just shows that at Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine and Sports Specialty Hospital, we're doing as advanced things as anyone around the country. We did a partial knee and an ACL reconstruction for him. I'm really glad you're doing well. Thanks for sending in the tweet. We appreciate you listening.
Yeah, and he sent that hashtag SportsMedRadio. Hey, this last segment, there's a number of things that you want to talk to Dr. Kosempa about. And again, we're talking about hip injuries, athletic hip injuries, and some of the things that we've got about 5 minutes. So,
yeah, what I wanted to talk to Dr. Kosempa about is I wanted you to tell us a little bit about some of the things that are newer that didn't exist when Bo Jackson got hurt. So tell us a little bit more about hip arthroscopy and what kinds of injuries that you're seeing that can be treated with minimally invasive techniques that couldn't have been 10, 15 years ago.
Right, yeah. Over the last 10 or 20 years, we've really made great advances, similar to how we did in the early 90s with shoulder arthroscopy and going back into the 70s and 80s with knee arthroscopy into minimally invasive treatment for non-arthritic hip disorders. So before you get to the point of needing a hip replacement, being able to fix the soft tissues, including the labrum, which is kind of a soft tissue lining around the socket part of the hip joint, to some degree, improving the structure of cartilage in the hip, but more than anything, trying to prevent arthritic change in the hip by sometimes reshaping the bones if there's an abnormal contact area, and repairing that labrum to restore normal fluid mechanics, so normal fluid gliding lubrication in the hip.
So one of the issues that comes up, Michael, that maybe you're not aware of is a problem called hip impingement. It's called femoroacetabular impingement. And yes, I did pronounce that so you wouldn't have to.
FAI.
Is that FAI?
FAI. And femoroacetabular impingement is an issue where the ball isn't completely round. Is that correct?
Correct.
So what can be done for that? What kind of symptoms do people present with that, and what can you do about it?
Yeah, this is an area of interest, wondering why young people will get arthritis. You know, some do and some don't, and we've tried to look for a reason for that. And we think that at least to some degree it's due to an abnormal contour at the junction of the head and neck of the femur. So just outside of the articular surface, a bump that actually with hip flexion impacts against the pelvic bone, against the socket part. And that can lead to abnormal shear stresses on the cartilage in the hip joint, predisposing to cartilage breakdown and premature early arthritis.
Yeah, it's in other words, it's not round. Right. So
right.
The round ball should fit in the round socket. If the ball isn't round, it won't fit in the round socket. And when you get to the end range of motion, you flex all the way up or you twist all the way out, it can actually injure the cartilage in the hip. Is that correct?
It can injure the cartilage in the hip, and it can injure the labrum. And the labrum is, you know, again, the soft tissue lining around the socket that makes the socket a little bit deeper. And it's very important for keeping the body's natural hip joint fluid between the cartilage surfaces. So when that labrum is torn, the fluid can kind of leak out, for lack of a better term, and that leads to abnormal cartilage contact.
So in other words, if you have what you think may be a hip flexor injury,
right,
or an adductor strain, like a groin strain, and it goes on and on and on, and it just doesn't seem to get better,
right,
there's a decent chance you have something in the hip joint, and then you should go see Dr. Kosempa so that he can take some pictures of it and talk to you about it, examine your hip, and see really what is it. Do you need to go see one of our therapists so you can get it fixed? Do you need to have some more imaging or some other treatments, or do you need to have a scope, which may prevent you from having arthritis in the future? So keep that in mind if you're having hip pain in the groin in particular as something you should get checked over.
Well, I'll tell you, I learned a lot today, guys. Talked about hip flexors and hip pointers and FAI. Like that?
Yeah, that was very
nice. That was good, right?
I really like it.
That was really good. I love the fact
that... Getting the hang of this, man.
I am. Like I told you before, I'm learning just a little bit to be dangerous, and now I feel like I have everything.
So do you go home now and tell your wife that you, like, know lots of extra stuff that she
doesn't
know?
She listens. Good. And first of all, happy birthday, Terry. It's my wife's birthday today.
Oh, happy birthday, Terry.
And she will say, hey, great question here, but maybe the follow-up question could have been, she's a registered nurse, so she kind of...
Well done. I'm glad that she keeps you in line. Somebody needs to.
You know what? And along with Terry, there's a lot of people that love the show, and I'll tell you why, because... You know what? You guys talk to our level. You talk to our level, and I appreciate that. Dr. Kosempa, thanks a lot for coming in.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, it's always good to see you again. You can tweet us, #SportsMedRadio, throughout the week, and we'll try to get those questions answered. Have a good week, guys. This has been the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.